Weekly discussion about issues of faith, spirituality, religion, and ethics. Now here's your host, Steve Shoemaker.
Good afternoon. This is Keeping the Faith. My name is Don Nolan. I'm filling in for Steve this evening. Steve is off today recovering from a medical procedure. We hope he will be back next Sunday afternoon. We are here this afternoon to talk about the topic of the religious and ethical dimensions of ecology and the environmental movement, and what churches can do and are doing, where they can be involved in a variety of ways. And our guest this afternoon is Reverend Claire Butterfield, who is the director of an organization called Faith in Place. Reverend Butterfield, are you there?
I am, yes. Thank you for having me.
Welcome to the program.
Thank you.
Thank you for joining us. Just a little bit about you. Reverend Claire Butterfield is a Unitarian Universalist community minister from Central Illinois, and I believe you are the official title is Executive Director of Faith in Place. Is that right?
That's right.
And as I understand it, this is a project that partners with religious congregations to promote clean energy and sustainable farming, among many other things. Is that right?
Among many other things.
Right. Just a little bit of background about you. Reverend Butterfield is, shall we say, ambidextrous. As I understand it, you are a ex or maybe current tax and a corporate attorney. Is that right?
I'm an ex. Lawyer.
Okay.
Good to be an ex-lawyer if you're not current on the law.
This is a wonderful combination. And she has a Master's of Divinity from Meadville Lombard Theological School. Is that right?
That's right.
And you went to the University of Illinois for your law degree in 83. Is that right?
It's been that long.
And I understand that you're now working toward a PhD at the Chicago Theological Seminary. Is that
right?
Toward
a Doctor of Ministry.
Doctor of Ministry.
In a few more months, I should be finished with that.
And you're now the community minister for Unity Temple in Oak Park. What is Unity Temple? Tell us a little bit about that.
It's the Unitarian congregation in Oak Park, and it is best known as Frank Lloyd Wright's church. He designed the building for the congregation very early in his career.
Right.
So it's known more architecturally than religiously, but it has a proud history in both.
Well, thank you for joining us this morning. This afternoon, we're going to talk with you about various environmental and ecological issues and the role that your congregation and religion in general has played in this. For our listeners, you can call in. This is a call-in show, and you can call in at 333-9455 if you have a question for our guests this afternoon. Outside of the immediate call-in area, you can call 1-800-222-9455 if you have a question for our guest. Well, Reverend Butterfield, why don't you tell us a little bit about what Faith in Place is exactly?
Sure. We started around 1999 when there weren't a lot of people making the connection between religion and the environment, and we just started trying to find congregations who were interested in that idea and who were ready to take some action, although we allowed a lot of freedom in the development of the program. We really were trying to find out what the connections were for people, what the concerns were, and how people wanted to express their religious values in their activity relating to the ecology around them. So we really let people loose to decide for themselves what was important, and congregation members very consistently identified a couple of areas that that they wanted to work on: energy conservation, renewable energy, and the food that they eat in the congregation building and that they eat at home. And then, of course, since we started in 1999, global warming has become more and more of a visible issue in our country, and so that has had an effect on how we talk about both energy use and food, because it relates to both. And we, Faith in Place, joined the national organization Interfaith Power and Light a few years ago so that we would be affiliated with groups in now 25 other states who are doing similar work.
Now, I've heard a little bit about this Interfaith Power and Light campaign. I grew up in Texas, and perhaps you can explain why it is that Illinois Interfaith Power and Light is messing with Texas.
It's really because we love the people at Texas Interfaith Power and Light so much. So we challenged them. We just put a shopping cart up on the website of Faith in Place that allows congregation members to purchase Energy Star lighting fixtures at a discount. And to roll it out, to get people used to it, we decided we would take on Texas, and we threatened to crush them with our superior sales, expecting, of course, that they would crush us.
I noticed this very unchristian-like rhetoric on your website. My goodness.
Yeah, well, their expression for us was mop the floor, I think.
Mm.
I think that was their official religious term for us.
Gotcha.
And it turned out that we squeaked out ahead of them by a few light bulbs because of the fundraiser campaign by LaSalle Street Church in Chicago. So we won, and we celebrated, and they acknowledged defeat with great graciousness and humility.
Power of the Windy City, huh?
Indeed.
I notice in your mission statement for Faith in Place, your two objectives are to love one another and care for the creation. You say that your goal is to create hopeful and welcoming spaces for people of all faiths to fulfill these two responsibilities. How does that work out in practice?
We define those two responsibilities as central to the teachings of all faiths. We have yet to encounter a faith that doesn't hold those two things as key teachings of faith. And how it works out in practice, I suppose it works out the same way for us that it works out in the rest of the world, which is to say mixed. But some of the things that have happened since we've started doing our work, some of my favorite things that have happened have been around the breaking down of barriers, which has to do with loving one another, and how the responsibility to care for the earth can help to break down those barriers, because it is common ground for people. So when we started, I was kind of driving around in my little Corolla trying to persuade people that this might be a religious issue, and now we're working with over 400 congregations, and they're really calling us and saying, we know it's a religious issue, how can we help? And things have happened along the way that just, I think that my favorite things that have happened have more to do with human beings than kilowatts. We started this little cooperative that sells meat that's raised by Illinois farmers. Most of it's certified organic, or it's a verifiable, sustainable standard. And it's pastured, it's humane, it's family farming, and it also meets the Islamic dietary requirements. And we started that co-op right after 9/11 and brought some Muslims and a Jewish advisor and some Christian folks down to meet some Christian farmers who had never seen a Muslim before. And that day stands out for me as one of my favorite experiences of my life. You know, everybody was a little nervous getting together, meeting for the first time, because all that the farmers had ever seen about Muslims was what they were seeing on TV at the time. And we sat down at a farmer's home. We broke bread together. We said prayers from the different traditions. And then people started talking about their grandmother's cooking. And all the fear kind of went away. That was a common language. The food became a common language for people to understand each other, and they realized that there really wasn't any reason to be afraid of each other. And the relationships that have come out of that cooperative since then have just continued to delight me.
Food is an interesting focus for spiritual conversations, isn't it?
It is. That really, more than anything else I've encountered, food seems to be a universal language.
Well, I was going to ask you, but it almost begs the question here. You have associated yourself, or the Faith in Place has associated itself with Buddhists, Muslims, Zoroastrians, Jews, Christians, Sikhs, and Hindus. What do they all have in common with Unitarians on the topic of the environment, other than food?
All those religions express a responsibility in some way in their scriptures. They express a responsibility by human beings, a special responsibility by humans to take care of the earth, that we're here in some kind of a stewardship role. And there's different language for it. There are different stories about it. But every faith we've encountered has some understanding that because of the special abilities of humans and the special status of humans within the biology of the Earth, we have a special responsibility to take care of this planet.
Well, there are, as you're well aware, a number of evangelicals, although their numbers seem to be diminishing these days, who believe they have dominion over creation. I'm sure you've heard that expression.
Yep.
And to them, dominion is circumscribed by what they call the end times. How do you talk to end timers who view the world as a veil of tears over which they have dominion? How do you bring folks like this in?
Well,
to your conversation.
If someone is really focused entirely on the next world, then there may be a very limited conversation. But my experience is that most people really aren't that exclusively focused on the next world. And my own view of that, it's my own reading of the Hebrew scripture that talks about dominion, is that that passage in Genesis is in a particular context, and it refers to, it puts the relationship of human beings toward the rest of the creatures in a comparison to the relationship between humans and God. And the relationship between God and us is not one of exploitation and overuse and avariciousness. It's one of loving care and compassion, and that should be our relationship to the other creatures if we accept that the language really specifically refers to a model. So dominion isn't domination. It's care. It's a responsibility of care. So that's one way of talking about it. And another way of talking about it is simply to say that the end times are not our responsibility. You know, if that's what's coming, then God will take care of it, and we have no power over that, no control over it. It's not up to us. What is up to us is how we live in the meantime. And it's very clear that Christian scripture in particular, even though the folks who wrote Christian scripture may have expected the end times to come fairly soon, those scriptures have a lot to say about how we treat one another while we're here.
Once again, for our listeners, if you would like to talk to our guest this afternoon, Reverend Claire Butterfield of Faith and Practice, you can call in two numbers. Local is 333-9455, which are the call letters of the station, WILL. You can also call 1-800-222-9455 if you'd like to post a question or make a comment on our topic, which is the role of religion in understanding the environment and vice versa. How do you respond to those evangelicals or other Christians or members of other faiths, for that matter, who think that it is idolatry to lavish worship on God's creation rather than God? I've heard this expression before.
I've heard that too, and I don't think that anything that we do at Faith and Place could be considered idolatry. We love the world and we love one another, which is not the same as worshiping the world or worshiping one another. That is reserved for God. So, there are folks who are pagan, and they may worship the earth directly. We don't have a lot of pagans around in the Midwest, and although we would actually welcome them into Faith and Place, that's really not who's here. So that's really not what's going on religiously in all the religions that are working with us.
We have a caller here on line one. Hello, you're on Keeping the Faith. You have a question for Reverend Butterfield?
I have a question, but I wanted to just tell the world who is listening on this program that you have a wonderful guest who is just really bright and one of the most intelligent people I've ever met and one of the most caring people I've ever met. You know who this is, Claire?
I do indeed.
Okay. I'm going to hang up, but I just turned on the radio and I just heard your voice and I said, I can't believe this. So I hope you have a wonderful day and a great program, and you're a very blessed person, man.
Thank you, my friend.
President of your fan club.
Apparently, and I swear I didn't set that up.
Wonderful. Tell us a little bit about the history of Faith in Place. Where did the name come from? It kind of reminds me of one of my favorite Hindu sayings, bloom where you're planted.
It it is trying to evoke this relationship between religion and a strong sense of place, that we have our religious principles in the abstract, but we love in the particular. And so you need to know where you're standing. And we really are trying to get folks to understand where they're standing scientifically and religiously. So it comes out of that. And it also comes out of months of struggle with our board to try to find some language that was religiously common ground.
What exactly is the Urban Agriculture for Kids program, supposedly at Logan Square?
That now is in several neighborhoods in Chicago, and we have one of our staff members is assigned to work with religious-based after-school programs and youth programs around the city. She now works in a couple of different neighborhoods, mostly with low-income Latino children, with the idea that helping them to understand how natural systems work can help them to become advocates for the environment. So they do a lot of exploration. They do some water testing in the local rivers. They've gone canoeing, and they also do a lot of urban agriculture. They do composting with worms in their after-school settings, and they grow some vegetables. She started gardens at a couple of locations. So they have an opportunity to see how things work. And one of my favorite parts of that project is that we do keep three beehives at a Chicago beehive cooperative, and the kids get to go and harvest the honey once a year so they can also see how those amazing creatures create their hives and make the honey. And then to watch these urban kids harvest honey and smell it and see it for the first time is really a favorite experience of mine.
Are these for local kids in the area of Logan Square, or is it all over Chicago that they're invited to come?
She floats around and does about a 6 to 8 week program at a number of different sites. So she's worked at some after-school programs at Catholic schools in Little Village and Pilsen and in the Logan Square neighborhood.
Mm-hmm. And what is voluntary simplicity discussion groups? What are those?
There are, we're really trying to reach people wherever they are, and some of our congregation members, particularly out in the suburbs, feel a little overwhelmed in their desire to live an environmentally sustainable life by the drive around them to consume more, which is clearly a serious part of our culture. And in the wealthier communities, there's more pressure to conform to it. So there are some conversations that are started, and there have been some curriculums written, including a really good one by the Northwest Earth Institute that we've used, that allow people to get together in small groups and talk about how they could voluntarily simplify their lives and give up so much dependence on material goods and use only what they need, use things up, and create a kind of a counterculture to the pressure to always consume more and more and more.
Have you heard of the term affluenza?
I have, and some of the congregations we work with have shown the film Affluenza as a way to help that conversation get started.
Are you focused on that? Do you address the issue of affluenza?
We will be happy to talk about the...
You might want to describe what it is for those who aren't acquainted with it.
The unsustainability of overconsumption and the dis-ease that the pressure to continue consuming produces and driving people to work longer hours and drive greater distances and so that they can own bigger homes, that cycle of consumption is something that we do talk about. It's not something that we talk about everywhere because a lot of the folks we work with are in the urban areas. Some of them are lower income and they're practicing involuntary simplicity, so it's not an appropriate conversation. But what we're really trying to get folks to understand is a different way of relating to the life around them, to see themselves as part of the whole, to see that every living thing has a place in a complex system of ecological interdependence, and that human beings are not excepted from that. We are part of nature. We're not apart from it. So I wouldn't say that voluntary simplicity is an emphasis for us. It's a way of getting a conversation started. But what we're really trying to do is to open up a different philosophy within the religious traditions of our participants that allows them to relate to the life around them in a more open way, a more loving way, a less self-assertive way.
And one of your programs you seem to be particularly fond of is the Sustainable Farming Program. What is that about?
I love that program because I did grow up in Champaign County among farmers, and I loved my neighbors, and I saw that farming was very hard on a lot of them. And that just stayed with me. So as we started this work, one of the things I was hoping to do was figure out some ways that congregations could support particularly small and mid-sized farmers in Illinois to earn a decent enough living and to get enough of a premium for using sustainable growing techniques that they could farm sustainably, both economically and ecologically sustainably, and there could be a real relationship between them and the religious people in a particular congregation that would allow them to make a living doing that. And so we started this co-op called Taqwa, which is spelled T-A-Q-W-A. That's an Arabic word, and it means more or less piety. And that was our first attempt to help bring people of faith who had a religious reason to want to eat meat that was grown in a particular way together with the farmers who produce it. And since then, we have we've also helped a synagogue that is just about to start a new CSA, Community Supported Agriculture Program, and we're going to encourage other congregations to do that too. And one of the things that I'm planning to do in the spring is I have a group of clergy that meet in the Chicago area with me every few months, and we're going to go on a little overnight retreat to Goshen, Indiana, and talk about how urban congregations and rural congregations might be able to work together to support small and mid-sized farmers. So if any clergy are listening to your program right now who are in the rural communities who would like to join us, I would encourage them to get in touch.
How would they get in touch with you?
I think via the website, which is www.faithinplace.org. That's, and all our contact information is on that website.
Okay. You prefer them to go that route rather than a phone number as well?
I would be happy to give the phone number at our offices, which is 312-733-4640.
And once again, this is Faith in Place, and we're talking to Reverend Claire Butterfield, who is the Executive Director of Faith in Place in Chicago. Let me just take a couple of minutes to give a couple of announcements related to the University YMCA. Tuesday at noon at the University Y, there is a talk with questions and answers by Cheryl Hinkle, and the topic will be about working with international students at the University of Illinois. Friday Forum, this coming Friday at noon at the YMCA, is Peggy Kovacic, who brings the view of a mother of soldiers to the Iraq War, and she will be discussing that topic. Next week here on Keeping the Faith, our guest will be a star on YouTube. KCC, I believe is how you pronounce it, talking about YouTube sex ed and sexual ethics. And then on February 20th, 2008, at 11:50 p.m., a previous guest from Keeping the Faith, Carolyn Treadway, who was on this program on January 27th, will be talking about the climate crisis. She'll be giving a presentation at the YMCA on March 6th at 6 p.m. The title is Awakening from Our Trance, Reversing Global Climate Change, from 6 p.m. to 7:30. If you're interested in those programs, you can contact the YMCA, the University YMCA on campus. Once again, we're talking with Reverend Claire Butterfield, who is Executive Director of Faith in Place in Chicago, and our number, if you'd like to call in to talk with our guest about any of the topics she is discussing, you can call 333-9455 or 1-800-222-9455. Well, let's talk a little bit about the history and background of this movement nationally. My understanding is that evangelicals are undergoing something of a sea change, hesitate to say a born-again experience related to the environment, but apparently at least 50%, if not more, evangelicals support environmental initiatives of the sort you're describing. What do you make of this feature in that part of Christendom called evangelical Christianity? What's going on here?
I think it's a very hopeful development because the evangelical Christian movement in the United States is a very politically influential movement, and so when they get behind an issue, it has an effect. So I'm very glad to see that change happen within evangelical circles. And I think that what's happened is that some folks within the evangelical leadership itself have had change, metanoia experiences, as we might call it in the Christian tradition, real change of heart, change of mind moments where they've seen this issue differently and understood that the destruction of God's creation has to have religious implications for them, no matter how long the world may continue to last, and that our compassion toward one another is shown by how we treat the smallest of these, the least of these. And so our behavior as ecologists, as citizens of the earth, has serious religious implications. And that shift has been very important in elevating the visibility of climate change as an issue in the United States and elevating the political discourse about that issue. So, again, I'm very happy to see that development within evangelical circles. We don't necessarily work with a lot of evangelical congregations because their religious beliefs may preclude them from working in an interfaith context. Some of the leaders of the evangelical movement have said that what they prefer to do with groups like Interfaith Power and Light and Faith in Place is to walk together separately so that we support the same goals, but that they are not seen as giving credence to religions other than Christianity. And I'm happy to have them along in whatever way their religion permits them to participate.
Do you have any that are involved at all with your organization?
We have some congregations that are more in the evangelical mode than we ever have before. We are certainly getting more involvement from what we might call the progressive evangelical congregations, ones who don't have any kind of an obstacle in working with interfaith organizations. So, yeah, we are seeing that as well. We're just seeing more involvement by everybody.
Well, it's amazing that of those religious groups within the United States, many evangelical organizations are growing in their support, something like since 2006, plus 4, plus 5, plus 6% change in support of environmental issues. I think that's remarkable, given that just about 2 years ago, Reverend Pat Robertson, Reverend Falwell, and others associated environmentalists with New Agers and secular humanism and so on.
Maybe having more mainline clergy involved in the religious environmental movement in general has helped them to see that it's not New Ageism. And I think they're seeing what everybody else is seeing. I've heard one person express this in the business context. There's just no business case for destroying life on Earth. And there's no religious case for it either.
So do you see capitalism in some general sense as coming along here?
I do, indeed. And in fact, before, in some ways before I saw shifts in our national political conversation on this question, I saw shifts within certain industries that made me very hopeful, that really surprised me. After Katrina, the insurance companies were front and center saying global warming is a huge issue for our industries and we have to do something about it. We can't afford to let things continue as they are. And I've heard multinational corporations that sell fish products, talk about how the collapse of the fisheries is not in their long-term interest, so they have to take an ecological stance. So I think there are a lot of good-hearted people working in different industries, very different industries, who understand that their long-term profitability depends on their ecological sustainability, on the ecological sustainability of their businesses. And I am seeing that shift. I'm seeing it everywhere. I hate to be hopeful because it's risky, but I have to say that in the last 12 months, I've felt more hopeful on these issues than I've felt in the previous 8 years.
Are you encouraged by the presidential campaign at all? Any candidates speaking to the issues that converge with your mission?
I'm encouraged that on this issue, every candidate who remains in a front-runner position, let me express myself in a politically neutral way, has stated that climate change in particular is a priority for them. So it's clear that the national conversation on this issue has shifted already. The current administration has changed its own position on the question and is willing at least to engage in conversation about it. And those whoever ends up replacing our current president is clearly going to push this issue forward, and that's a very hopeful development.
Let's go back to your background a little bit. How did you get involved in this? As I understand it, you have been interested in environmental issues for most of your life.
I have. No one could have planned for this. You could not leave your law career and head for seminary and say, I think I'd like to start a nonprofit that brings religious groups together to work for the environment, because that would have been a silly thing to think.
On the other hand, who better than an ex-tax and corporate attorney, right?
Well, things have a way of finding you. I had done a field study my first year in seminary at the nonprofit that eventually generated what became Faith in Place, and just as I was finishing up seminary, they posted the first position for the project that became Faith in Place. So I was suddenly faced with an opportunity to be held accountable for all the griping and questions I had raised during my field placement, and I jumped on it and never looked back. It really does bring together everything I know how to do and so many of the things that I care about. It was an ideal ministry for me.
Well, there are some who would say that the only way real change is going to take place is if it's in the bottom line economic interest of corporations and business interests to do so, and you've indicated that that is happening. Which, I'm not quite sure how to put this question, which comes first, which is primary, a religious spiritual objective versus an economic interest objective. Luckily, they converge, but then, of course, what happens when they divide?
And they have not always converged. Clearly, there are still plenty of folks who find it in their economic interest to mine and burn coal, and that is not in the interest of our longevity on this planet. So there are divisions. I don't like to make assumptions about the motivations of people, or I would like to start with the assumption most people in most positions are motivated by the same kinds of things that I am, that they have positive motivations. But I do think that these issues, that the changes that we have to make are so significant. There's a uniformity within the scientific community that we have to reduce our carbon output 80% by 2050. 80% by 2050. That is a huge change in the way we operate.
That's more aggressive than Kyoto, right?
Much more. Mm-hmm. Much more. And those targets are being talked about in the political arena. I served, however inadequately, last year on the Illinois, on the Governor Blagojevich's Climate Change Advisory Group, and those were the targets we were handed at the outset of our process together. And the governors of other states have convened similar conversations, and they have named those targets because there's a scientific understanding that those are the targets we need to hit. And that is not business as usual in the United States. Something has to motivate a change, and in a lot of cases, sacrifice. It's not just a matter of everybody trading in their car for a hybrid, it's a matter of a lot of us who live in urban areas stopping, getting out of our cars altogether, taking the bus, taking the L, because we can, and the folks in the rural communities don't have that option. So we're going to have to change how we live, and we're going to have to be motivated by something to make that change and to sustain it. And there are plenty of folks out there who think that fear and crisis are the only things that really motivate people to change. But I am a minister. I can't take that position. Those are not the human beings I know, and it is against my theology to believe that about people. I think that love is a foundational motivation for a lot of the things that human beings do. And if we can start to see our ecological behavior as an act of love, then we will be motivated to make the changes we need to make.
We have a caller on line one. Hello, you're on Keeping the Faith. You have a question or comment.
I was calling. This is kind of a more of a specific question. I thought the guest might know. There was a bill in the Illinois legislature, in the Senate. I think it passed the Senate, and then going through the House about net metering. And, you know, the idea would have been that power companies in Illinois would be required to provide net metering, which means they run the power meter, they have to run the power meter backwards for people generating their own power. So if you, like, put solar panels on your roof, or more importantly, if you get a company to do it for you, there are, you know, starting to be some companies where rather than having to do your own installation, which could cost you $10,000, $20,000, $30,000, you could rent solar panels, you know, for like, you know, $500 damage deposit. You agree to keep them on your house for, you know, 20 years or whatever, and then you buy the power from them. And I just wondered if the guest knew what the status of this bill was, being kind of involved with this kind of thing.
I have to confess I can't give you a complete up-to-date status of net metering in Illinois. I think we have some net metering available, but I that's something I'd have to look up.
That's fine. I just thought you might be a person who could talk about it. And anyway, I know the focus is more spiritual, but
we pay attention to. That's part of the joy of doing my job, is that I end up talking about net metering, solar installations, hardware, software, thermostats, and how to slaughter cows Islamically. None of which I know enough about. So I'm always at a slight disadvantage.
Well, thanks so much.
Thank you.
So you don't know how to slaughter cows?
I know how it's done. I have not done it.
The environmental movement and the related sciences are just exploding these days, aren't they?
They are.
It's amazing how complex it's getting.
It's complex, and then it's important to remind people that on some level it's simple. You know, don't take more than you need. Think about the needs of others.
Mm-hmm.
Live on this earth as if it mattered, and as if you cared about the life around you.
Once again, if you'd like to call in a question or a comment to our guest, Reverend Claire Butterfield, who's the director of Faith in Place in Chicago, the number is 333-9455 or 1-800-222-9455. Let's talk a little bit about the broader scene besides just the United States. Apparently the environmental movement has gone global. There are a number of people around the world working on green projects. I'm aware of something called the Water Keeper Alliance. I'm curious if you're acquainted with that group.
The name is familiar. I'm sure I've looked at them recently.
An environmental organization founded in 1999, attempting to gain control over water. And there are a number of other folks around the world who are concerned with the privatization of water and other vital resources. I don't know if you're acquainted with Muhammad Yunus.
I am. I have looked at the question of the privatization of water.
Have you gotten involved at all with his particular focus on microfinancing?
We tend to have a very place-based focus,
mm-hmm.
but as part of that, we also try to help folks understand that you can spend your money in a way that is in accordance with your values, and you can also invest your money in a way that's in accordance with your values. So there's a little micro-lending organization in Chicago called Finca, which is related to the micro-lending internationally. And we've just created opportunities for people to learn about how they, perhaps as investors, could make their money available to a micro-lending organization in another country and why it would make sense to do that.
The reason I mention him is what you said earlier, is he argues that a human being is not just an economic production unit with self-interest, but someone with hopes and dreams and aspirations of a spiritual as well as a moral nature, and that business and capitalism in general should adjust to that recognition, and seems to play into your way of thinking. And apparently he's come to the United States. He's brought his work in Bangladesh to the United States to work on similar projects to yours. I'm just curious if you're aware of his efforts.
Not locally, although I'm sure they could come here to great advantage.
Well, there are other folks. I think her name is Vandana Shiva, who's also going around the world. She's worried about the issues associated with biodiversity. In your work with local rural farmers, are you concerned with maintaining control over the diversity of agricultural production?
That's a concern worldwide, and it's particularly... The patent issues are particularly poignant in some other parts of the world. The question of Indian access to rice seed from a crop that is the patrimony of India, for example, or corn as the patrimony of South America. These crops had their origins in those places. People developed the crops over thousands of years, and now they're being told generally by American corporations that to keep seed from their crop so that they can seed a new crop is a patent violation. And that is something that we do talk about within our sustainable agriculture program. It's there's no word for that other than outrageous. I try to be moderate in my speech, but to take that livelihood away from people in the name of profit is inhuman, and it doesn't reflect the justice of the history of the development of those crops. They were developed by those people over centuries.
Well, to what extent are the rural farmers you're working with having to deal with the same problems that Indian farmers who are being displaced from their land and forced to use genetically altered crops? Is there any similarity at all, or is there a different dynamic here?
I think the dynamics are different here, and they have more to do with land values and development pressures. I think those are the hardest things that that small farmers here who want to grow food face. We don't talk much at Faith in Place about farming for export. The growing of commodities, corn and soybeans, even though that's most of the farming that goes on in Illinois. Obviously, from an ecological point of view, farming with such intensity, farming monocultures, farming smaller and smaller numbers of varieties of seed for those two crops are problematic, and farming them for energy rather than food is problematic from an environmental point of view and from a human point of view.
Mm-hmm.
So with our limited understanding, we have some serious questions to raise about the way that most agriculture is conducted in the state of Illinois. But what we're interested in is not a negative conversation. It's a positive conversation about the possibilities of redeveloping rural communities around the production of food that is designed for sale into the local market, which is a kind of agriculture that has practically disappeared in the Midwest, although it's making an encouraging comeback lately, I think.
I understand that co-ops and organically grown, locally grown food is really making a comeback, isn't it, across the country?
It is in a market which over the years, in a food market that has been flat for many years, organic production has tended to grow 20%. The economic value of it has tended to grow 20% a year for the last several years. So it is it's a booming market. It's a profitable market. Organic food is more profitable per acre to farmers than conventional food production, although it's not more productive per acre.
Mm-hmm.
There's some evidence coming in now from long-term studies that it may also be more productive per acre over an extended period of time. So what we'd really like to see is the revival of a local food movement. We would like to see folks who live in Champaign-Urbana eat food that's grown in Champaign County. I would guess that that's something in the nature of 1% of what people eat in Champaign County is grown there. I don't really have those numbers at my fingertips, but that tends to be what the percentages look like. That's certainly the case in the state of Iowa, that 97% of what people eat in a very agricultural state is coming in from California and further away. So that's a missed opportunity for small farmers who are interested in producing food for a market. And some of these alternative market structures like community-supported agriculture provide a way for farmers to know who their buyers are and to create a living relationship between the producer and the consumer so that they're sharing risks and they're kind of in it together. And those relationships are very fulfilling for people and also allow for enough economic stability to keep farmers who really want to be farming on their farms.
Let me just do a major shift at the level of conversation here. Bill Moyers has an article entitled, speech I guess he gave, Is God Green? Let me just try that question out on you. Is God green?
There are as many answers to that question as there are religious views. But from my own theological point of view, I have been looking recently at theologies that relate the complexity of the natural world to our understanding of God's nature. And for me, these theologies are very powerful. There are ideas being generated within the religious academy right now that talk about God as evolving, God as open to creation, and God as interactive in relationship, in deep relationship with creation, with the life that exists on this earth and in the universe. I mean, we tend to have a very earth-centered view, but the universe is a big place. I think those theologies are also very hopeful, that we need to think more about what the implications are for our doctrines and maybe revisit them if we need to, if they are not contributing to the flourishing of life on Earth.
I heard one critic say of Christianity that it is the most anthropomorphic or anthrocentric of the world's religions. I'm not sure I agree with that, but what do you think?
I don't know that Christianity stands out, at least among the Abrahamic faiths. I would say they're all three of those are pretty anthropocentric, and it seems to me that...
How is that problematic for the environmental movement at all?
Well, it's problematic if it allows for a perception of the human being as separate from nature. And it's also problematic if it allows for a hierarchical view of the human at the top and nature beneath, because that is not an accurate scientific view of how life works on this planet. We are embedded within an enormously complex system of life, and we are utterly dependent upon it. We are not separate from it. We are part of it. We influence it, and we need to understand that. And I think there's a great grace in that, in being part of this amazingly complex system of care, and there's a great responsibility in it. And both of those things, grace and responsibility, seem to me to be at the heart of the religious undertaking. You know, we're trying to live with all humility and with a real meaningful love for our brothers and sisters, and in my view, our brothers and sisters include all the living things around us.
I remember growing up singing a hymn that goes like this: "This world is not my home. I'm just passing through. My treasures are laid up somewhere beyond the blue." Are you suggesting that we drop that from the hymnal?
I would interpret it differently. Mm-hmm. You know, everything's subject to interpretation. And if that hymn allows you to de-emphasize your material possessions in favor of the state of your soul, then it may contribute in a very helpful way to the kind of relationship to the rest of life that we're trying to cultivate at Faith in Place. So I have my own theological interests, and I have some doctrines that I find completely fascinating, but I'm not here to pick on anybody's doctrines. I'm here to see if we can hold them up to the light a little bit and find a nugget in them that will allow you as an adherent of that particular faith to live in a way that is more more compatible with the flourishing of the life around you.
If someone was interested in developing a program similar to yours, although there are a number of programs here in Champaign County and the region that are focused on communal work, collaborative work, organic farming initiatives abound. What would you recommend that happen to get something like Faith in Place going in some of your various projects? For example, how do we get Illinois Interfaith Power and Light campaign down here to Champaign, Urbana?
Call me. I'll come down. We have connections now with congregations. We have, I think, one in Carbondale, so we can claim to span the whole state from north to south. And we have a number of congregational friends in the Springfield area and in Bloomington, and would just love to collaborate with congregations in Champaign-Urbana as well. And what we would do, because we are at a distance, is help to get you started to develop a local conversation that we would feed into and facilitate as much as we can. And we'd show up in person a couple times a year, and boy, would we like to do that.
Now, you have some after-school programming and summer activities for young people, as I understand it?
We do.
And up in Chicago?
And really, they are limited to Chicago just because there's a limit to how far we can send our one youth outreach person, our poor harried youth outreach person, although she's working on curriculum and capturing some of the materials that she has been developing with her work with the kids in the Chicago area so that those can be put up on the web and made available to youth leaders and churches around the state.
And this program focuses on gardening, worm composting, and honeybee keeping. You mentioned this earlier. If someone was interested in learning more about that down here, what would they do?
We would, if they want to get in touch with us, we would be happy to get down to them all the resources that we've developed and how to talk about that. We're a 5-person organization, so we don't really have endless numbers of staff people to mm-hmm. send around the state. But we have developed a lot of curriculum material and can help them get started with that kind of stuff.
What's new? You have a newsletter. What's coming up in your various events? I understand that there's a few near-term happenings that you're sponsoring.
We are. Thank you for asking that question. We have a workshop coming up on March 9th that's up on the website, and that one is really focused on it's called Faithful Citizenship, and it's about how folks in religious congregations can engage in the policy-level activity that's going on in the state of Illinois in the coming legislative session. There are going to be a lot of legislative proposals that relate to the environment and the quality of our environment in Illinois, and we really want congregations to be informed and active as those bills move forward. So that's our next big event.
When and where?
It'll be March 9th at 2 o'clock at JRC Evanston, which is the Jewish Reconstructionist Congregation in Evanston, and it's the first LEED-rated synagogue in the country, and they're letting us come in as the first outside group to use their new green synagogue for this event. So it's exciting on two counts. You get to tour the building as well as learn what the policy agenda is in Illinois for the coming year and how to get engaged with it.
So what else is happening?
Policy is big this year. State-related,
Springfield?
State and federal. It's possible that there will be a federal carbon cap bill that moves this year. And so we're watching those developments. There's nothing quite concrete yet. There's a proposal which needs a lot of work in the Senate. But it's possible that something will move in the next few months. And as part of Interfaith Power and Light, we are watching the federal developments as well, and we'll be sending out email notifications to folks if something develops there so that they can react quickly. So through our website, again, people can get onto those distribution lists, and they can be involved in that kind of development. And we have this retreat coming up in May, as I mentioned, where a group of clergy from the urban area around Chicago is going to meet with some clergy from the Goshen, Indiana area. And this is an ongoing conversation about the ideas of the Religious Academy and how they can be, how they can find life in the ministries of the clergy who participate in this conversation. It's a wonderful and rich ongoing dialogue among clergy of different religious traditions. And this retreat is going to focus on what are the possibilities for rural congregations, urban congregations coming together and doing some collaborative work that might support the development of new community-supported agriculture, that might support existing organic farmers. This is definitely in the dreaming of dreams category of things that we do, but I am very excited about it.
We just have about a minute and a half, but I understand you also help some congregations, develop wind and solar power. Is that right, up in Chicago?
That is correct. We had the first Lutheran congregation in Chicago go solar last fall. They put a solar hot water system on their congregation. We have a couple more in the pipeline, including what we hope will be the first solar-powered mosque in the United States. And we help congregations review the technology for that kind of application, and then we help them walk through any grant possibilities that are available to them so they can get some of the funding from outside sources.
So if a local religious organization wants to go green, you're there to help.
We are, in every way we can.
All right. Well, we've been talking with Reverend Claire Butterfield, who is the Executive Director of Faith in Place, on the topic of religious and ethical dimensions of ecology and what churches can do and are doing, and her vision for urban and rural collaboration in this area. Thank you very much for being with us, Reverend Butterfield.
Thank you very much.
You've been listening to Keeping the Faith. Join us again next week on Keeping the Faith. We will be focusing upon a YouTube star who's focusing on sexual education and sexual ethics. Thank you for joining us. My name is Don Nolan.
You've been listening to Keepin' the Faith, the production of WILL AM 580. The opinions expressed on this program are solely those of the participants.
Every person on Earth is unique and special, but some people, maybe 1 in 100, are autistic. I'm Jim Fleming. Next time on To the Best of Our Knowledge, we get to know a few autistic people with Asperger's syndrome. Also, Oliver Sacks will tell us about the human brain and music. It's To the Best of Our Knowledge from PRI, Public Radio International.
Tonight at 7, here on WILL Urbana.
WILL programs are funded in part by a grant from TK Service Center, 806 Perkins Road in Urbana, offering automotive repair on cars and trucks by ASE-certified technicians since 1984. A shuttle service for customers is also available on the web at tkservicecenter.com.
This year's vintage vinyl sale for WILL's Illinois Radio Reader is Saturday, May 17th at Lincoln Square Village, Urbana. Do you have boxes of old records and a turntable stored in the closet? Don't throw them away. Donate your CDs, records, DVDs, tapes, and working stereo equipment to Vintage Vinyl. Call Dean Geiken at 217-333-6503 for more information.